What is going on, everybody? It's Wednesday night at 7 p.m., and that means you are inside the Browns beat. I'm Michael Keefe. He is Fred Greatham, and we are ready for the next hour filled with Browns talk as we are now a little over a week, post-NFL draft. And while it may seem like there's not a lot going on, there always is a lot going on in Berea and with the Cleveland Browns. So we're glad you're here. We're glad you're joining us. Come on in, get posted up, and we've got a great night planned for you. On the OBR streaming network here. Again, you're with us inside the Browns beat. Then you're going to get an hour break. You can come back, hang out with me, Chad, Joe, on Garage Beers at 9 p.m., where we're talking Cavs in the playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs, the Guardians, and the way they're kind of functioning with their young team. And we may even get into a little bit more of the Browns. So you'll want to tune in there at 9 Wednesday. Double feature Wednesday is always a big night. Again, if you are not already subscribed, get over to theobr.com, hit subscribe, and you too can be a part of Cleveland's oldest, largest Cleveland Browns coverage site, where you get to read all the inside information from all of our staff, all the best articles from our crew, plus the communities, the boards, all that stuff. It's a great place to be if you're a Browns fan. So if you're not already signed up, get over to theobr.com, hit subscribe right now, and you can become a member as well. Fred Greatham. Good to see you, sir. Now you've had a little over a week to recover from the NFL draft and all that. And how you feeling?
Feeling pretty good. You know, ready to see some football this weekend. We get to see the rookies, you know, get out on the field. And, you know, it's, I think for a lot of it, it's really orientation. Get them all in here and kind of get used to what the practice schedule, the regimen will be, because the following week or two is when they get back on the field, the whole team, at least voluntary, those that are at the off-season program, they will get back on the field, I think the 20th. So like the next, and they want them rookies to kind of be as much up to speed as possible. And it's all in prepping to get ready for the mandatory mini camp, which takes place like June 8th to the 10th. That's kind of the crescendo of the off-season program that finishes it up. And then they're on a hiatus for about 6 weeks until training camp. And then it's on, the season's on. So more than anything, I don't expect a lot of football, so to say. But I like to at least be able to see what these guys look like up close and personal. You know, last year, Mike, I saw Carson Schlesinger for the first time. Didn't know much about him, but my first impression was before we even, you know, they're not hitting or anything, but just in a uniform, even without full pads, he reminded me of a young Clay Matthews, you know, a guy just the way he was running around out there with the blonde hair and – he looked like a football player. I mean, probably, although, and he turned out to be a pretty good football player. So I'm kind of anxious to see what Fano looks like in Boston and Concepcion and McNeil Warren and all those guys that were drafted to kind of get your first look at them in a uniform. Of course, we'll do a lot of videos so anybody here can follow along, you know, and see what's going on real time. So that's Friday at 1 o'clock is a practice. And then Saturday at 1 o'clock is a practice. We'll hear from Todd Monken both days and players. I expect, you know, we'll hear from Fano and Boston and Concepcion and maybe even McNeil Warren. That would be probably the, if they do two on each day or however they do it, that's what I would expect.
Yeah, we've got a whole portion of the show tonight built in to talk about the post-draft guys that got added, the undrafted rookie free agents, and we'll get into that in just a little bit. I don't want to dive into all those names yet. But, Fred, you know, you've got your – well, they have I don't know why I'm losing my mind. You got your 10, 9, 10, whatever it was, guys you got in the draft. Plus, I think they wound up with another 15 or so undrafted rookie free agents. Plus, you're going to have another, I think they have 8 guys that they've invited to rookie minicamp. So, you know, you're going to have a solid 34, 35 guys there at rookie camp, just getting a taste of being a part of the Cleveland Browns and you know, trying to make an impression. You know, a lot of those guys are just purely going to be trying to make an impression on their coach. And so it's a big, it doesn't feel like a big thing because for Spencer Fano, it's getting out there. It's getting to put on the colors for the first time, and getting to practice with your coaches for the first time. And for Concepcion and Boston and those, and McNeil Warren, for all those guys, it's just getting a chance to do it for the first time. But that rookie minicamp, Fred, for about, I don't know, 25 guys, is a really big deal for them in terms of trying to come in, make an impression so they can stick on a roster.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at a pure, there's been drafts. The Browns drafted 10 players. A lot of times, you know, they might only make 5, 6, 7 picks. But I think last year they drafted 7. And so obviously, even with the undrafted guys, the Browns haven't released it. It's just pretty much reports and agents and players self-reporting. I think we have them on our tracker, 15 [S2] Yep. [S1] Or 16. So draft picks and that's 25, 26 guys. Well, you'd think that would be, but that's never how it is. I'm always surprised. There'll be, I bet you, pushing 40 guys out there because they will invite players that were on the team last year that were on the practice squad or maybe injured, you know, guys that didn't play the whole year, maybe a Winston Reed, maybe a Bookie Watson. And part of it is, and like you said, tryout guys. I remember one year they might have had one quarterback, so they invited a couple tryout quarterbacks because you have to realize you can't have your receivers run pass patterns if there's no quarterback. The coaches aren't going to do that. So Talon Green is not going to be the only quarterback, in my opinion, there. They're going to be at least another one, maybe a couple. So this is always a chance for a guy to show what he can do. Maybe it's just for that. Hey, bring this guy in just really so we have a body, somebody throwing the ball. But at several positions, because they're going to want to line up offense versus defense. And frankly, there's going to be some positions they don't really even have bodies. You know, you might have one, you know, tackle. You know, that's not true because they drafted a couple. But you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
You know, that positions they don't really even have somebody. So that's where they'll fill in because they want to be able to at least line up and scrimmage because for those that are going to be here, they want them, like I say, to be able to hit the ground running as soon as possible in the OTAs and the upcoming mini camp.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we'll get to some of those names because, again, we know, according to reports, I know the Browns don't officially release things, but I know there is going to be at least one other quarterback there that we know of outside of their draft pick, but we'll get to that list in a little bit. We'll talk about rookie minicamp in a little bit. But I do want to say this for today's episode and really for the next couple of months, while we're getting through these kind of, I think of these in the NFL season as the dog days of May and June when, yeah, you got rookie minicamp and that's fine. And you'll get some voluntary work in here and there and that's fine. There's not really a lot that happens in May and June that's too crazy or big newsworthy until we start getting in towards the later parts of July and we start talking about training camp and then we start really getting into it. But having said that, again, we want you to feel like this is your show on Inside the Browns Beat. We want you to feel like you're inside the Browns Beat with one of the guys that has done this longer than anybody in Fred Greatham. So if you've got topics you want to talk about, if you've got questions that you want us to address on the show, just throw them in the comments. I've already got a couple things that I've starred that we'll get to a little bit later. But please, please, please go ahead and be a part of the show and we'll get as many up here as we can in this one. Before we get to the undrafted free agents and the rookie minicamp coming up, and maybe you can give us, Fred, some of your stories from past rookie camps, maybe some of the most interesting things you've seen there. I do want to talk about this, Fred. Did you get a chance? And I don't, shame on me for not remembering what it was called, but did you get a chance to actually watch the documentary that they did? NFL films on the draft, like the behind the scenes. What was it called? They got all the footage from behind the scenes from the draft. Did you get a chance to watch it, Fred?
I saw a clip or two, but I did not really watch the whole thing. I did more of the cliff notes, you know, what was the bottom line? You know, they were talking about the Cowboys and the Browns and making a trade and talking about it and so forth. I'm kind of, yeah, it's interesting to me, but okay, it didn't happen. So, you know, I read some of the transcript on what, from the Browns side, what Barry said. And, you know, I think I read more about what the Yahoo reporter, you know, from the Browns side was saying. And so I find that interesting. When you kind of take down the curtain a little bit, even though we're in the same building, you know, we're not privy to those things, and they don't say, we're not able to hear everything being said like the reporter was there. So that was quite a nice opportunity for the Yahoo reporter to be up in the room for the first round. But yeah, just kind of interesting that, you know, I've heard different reports, you know, Barry, I think on local radio said it was down to three people, Tyson, Fano, and then another report said it was Manigawa, the other tackle. And so you heard on another one him say Tate was one of the ones in the three. So a little interesting there, a little discrepancy, but it doesn't really matter, you know, if they were planning on taking Fano, you know, of the three anyway. So those are interesting, but I didn't really look at that wall to wall, no.
Well, and you kind of just brought up the thing that I thought this was fascinating. Listen, with Andrew Berry, we just don't get the opportunity to get a lot of behind the scenes real information too much, because he's pretty buttoned up about that kind of stuff, and he doesn't release that. He doesn't like when you think somebody kind of knows how he approaches things and his strategies and all that. So you hit on the first thing, and this is straight out of Andrew Berry's mouth in the draft room. This to me was the most fascinating thing. You know, after all the work everybody does leading up to the draft and talking about the players and who's going to go where and what players are the best and all this, they got the trade offer from Kansas City, and they decide to accept it to move from 6 to 9 and then add more resources in the draft. And Andrew Berry tells the room, hey, at 6, we got 3 guys here that we know they're on our, like, we want these guys list. We would take any of these 3 guys at 6, which means if we go to 9, and we know Kansas City's coming up for not one of these guys. So if we go at 9, we know we're going to have one of these 3 guys there. And then he says the names, and it's Spencer Fano, it's Jordan Tyson, like you said, and it's Francis Mauingoa from Miami. And that took me, that surprised me a little bit. Don't get me wrong, it doesn't surprise me that Tyson and Mauingoa were on that list. I think it was a really good example of something we have talked about for a while now on this show, Fred, of just kind of getting that NFL prospect fatigue that you get, and you start talking about why the top guys shouldn't be the top guys, and then why other guys maybe should be the top guys. And that's what started to happen in the whole conversation was, you know, we started scouting these guys like they were, we started ranking guys in all kinds of weird ways. And I think it showed you that, like, from the jump, Fano and Mauingoa were, like, talked about as the two top tackles in this year's class from the beginning of the season last year. And Jordan Tyson was always talked about as one of those top guys. I thought it was fascinating that the Browns said any of those 3 guys were on the board at 9, we'll be happy with any of those 3. It turns out Tyson went at 8. So they didn't have a chance to get that wide receiver. That would have been interesting to see if they would have gone tackle or wide receiver. But they had their choice, their tackles, and they took Spencer Fano. I think it was a really cool behind-the-curtains kind of peek at the Browns' thought process. And it was those 3 guys. It wasn't other guys that we'd been talking about forever and that we'd kind of ramped up. Those were their guys, and they got the tackle they wanted.
In fairness, Tate was gone at 4, so that might have shifted. It'd been interesting if Tate and Tyson were there, if Tate was one of the 3, say, to begin with, and immediately they pivoted. But to your point, I don't think they changed their rankings a whole lot. Phil Savage always called it the silly season. There's a lot of reports leaked out to reporters looking for news and so forth that are more than eager to write it and run with it, which is a lot of times put out by the team to try to devalue a certain player or whatever. Not that it, you know, Nick Shooker used to work for the Browns. He now works for NFL.com. I think he's the one that he was pretty passionate saying, I'm telling you guys, the Browns are very serious about Ty Simpson, you know, and that led people to believe like, wow, they might take him at 6. Well, I think they were interested in him, but it would have been maybe at 24. And so that's where the read is. But it's like you said, when Munkin said Fano was the guy we wanted all the way along, I do believe that if they would have had to make a choice between those three, they still would have taken Fano. The other thing I find fascinating, and I guess this is the business you're in, and so you have to somewhat trust the other GMs, even though you're competing with them. It's always fascinating to me that the Browns would trade with the Chiefs, who are a big rival. If you're ever going to go to the Super Bowl, you got to get through Kansas City, that you would trust them saying, no, we're not going to take one of those three guys. We're going to take the cornerback. I mean, do you really trust that? I mean, that's that to me. It's my thing is, I'm old enough to remember a guy named Carlos Boozer. Trust okay. me. I'm All not right. going to leave, you know? And, you know, so that to me, but yeah, they knew 6 would be a cornerback. So 7, 8, 9, you get one of the three, as long as you're happy with any of them. So it is kind of, those things are kind of a little interesting to me, is that, especially when you're talking to a rival, how you know that it's straight up, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Now, listen, I want to say this right now because I've noticed it being weird. I want to say maybe my internet's going a little bit weird here on my side because things keep cutting out on me. So if that does happen, don't freak out. I'll be back. If for some reason I get booted, I'll be back and I'll come back. And if I seem weird or my internet seems bad, I'll do my best to fix it and figure it out. We got this question from James Frank that said, do you think he said those three names in the order he wanted them or just named them off? I think he just named them off. I think he meant it. Any of those three guys, if they're on the board, they're going to be happy. They'll be fine with it. I think he was just saying, we like these three guys. I think what he was saying is any of these three guys, we'd have been happy to take at 6. We know we're guaranteed to get one of them at 9. Why not make that move? And I like that draft strategy. What really surprises me is that it seems to put Mauingoa on the same level as Spencer Fano. Like it didn't sound like they were horrendously upset if Fano got taken and they had to settle for Mauingoa. Again, I think he was the guy that a lot of people thought, oh, he's only going to be able to be a right tackle, or he's maybe going to be a guard. I really liked him through the whole process, but that surprised me a little bit. But I also liked I think it was Jimmy Haslam. Once Tyson went off the board at 8 to the Saints, I think it was Jimmy Haslam in the background that just looked and said, well, you got your tackle. And that was it. And it didn't seem like it was a big, crazy decision. I mean, I think they were down to those two guys. But if Fano was on the board, man, Fred, you heard them. If you saw that clip, and anybody that saw that clip of Andrew Berry basically turning to their scouts and their offensive line coach and saying, all right, tell us why Fano's the guy. And they just started ranting and raving about how great Spencer Fano is, man. That's if you're a Browns fan, it's got to get you excited. It's got to get you excited for that pick. They were pumped in that room to get him.
Yeah. I mean, the other two guys, the other tackle and Tyson, all had a little bit of questions about some injury situations. So, you know, that didn't seem like that was scaring them off at all, that they were, you know, by making the trade, they were all right with whatever happened. But yeah, I mean, as far as I think, I've been around Munkin just enough to think that he is pretty much a straight shooter and he says the way it is. And he said, I praise, you know, Andrew Berry for making the trade and still getting the guy we wanted all along. You know, they always say that's the guy we wanted, but I do think that Fano had an edge. I think he could have just said, we got one of the guys that we wanted anyway, even with the trade. He said, that is the guy we wanted to take all along at six, is the way I interpreted it. Obviously, he's not making the pick. Berry pulls the trigger. But I think that if you're the head coach in your first year, that's got to make you feel real good that you've got like your seventh or eighth offensive lineman this offseason to totally not only overhaul the starting group, but give you a depth too deep in re-signs or free agent signs or draft picks. And so, you know, all the way around, that's in the trenches we've talked about for years is what they did. So you got youth as well as some experience. And, you know, I just think that, you know, behind the curtain a little bit was the way I saw it was, yeah, Fano is the guy they wanted. They're very happy with that. We're moving on from that.
Yeah, and to go back to what you said before about just trusting your trade partner, Phil says this is my initial thing. It'd be a scummy move not to put it past anybody to be scummy to their own benefit, but to lie about who they picked just to come up. But this certainly would not be a best practice in the NFL, because I would imagine if the Chiefs did that and then they took somebody, they lied, and then they took somebody the Browns wanted just to get up over the Browns, I would imagine Andrew Berry and the Browns would have a lot of conversations about that situation and how the Chiefs operate with a lot of other teams in the league to make sure that people know, hey, if the Chiefs want to call you and make a trade, remember, here's what they did to us. So it would not make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and Andrew Berry even spoke about that there's kind of an unwritten rule, that you got to keep some things close to the vest, but as far as different determinations, that they're above board. It'll be interesting to see how the rest of the league will deal with DaCosta and the Ravens after kind of pulling that stunt with backing out of the
Max Crosby
of the Crosby deal, because you could better yourself when you realize you could get Trey Hendrickson for less just for money. And I think some people were looking with the gone to sigh there saying, what's this about? You know,
for sure. The other thing that really stood out to me in that documentary is that I think the Dallas Cowboys think this is Madden. I think they play Madden, the video game, and I think they think this is Madden. They offer the worst trades I think I've ever heard a team offer. I was sitting there watching as Jerry Jones is there and his son Steven's making the calls and offering these deals and trades, and I'm sitting there going, if you offered an equivalent trade in any fantasy football league across the country during football season, everybody's laughing you out of the room. But that the Cowboys just were like, yeah, let's, hey, they made the offer to the Browns, the one that was reported forever for 9-24 from the Browns for 12-20 from the Cowboys. And they made it just straight up, just a straight up trade offer. And I love how Steven Jones was like, well, let's send it over and let them like mull it over. Andrew Berry's like, no.
Then we'll throw in a fifth or something.
Then they did that. They did that multiple times throughout the draft where they were like, well, you can have a fifth. Do you want this fifth? You can have a fifth. I loved how Andrew Berry, they showed him going, they showed the call between him and Steven Jones. And Andrew Berry just like, yeah, that's not going to do it for us. I think Andrew Berry said it's like, he stood up and he was like, well, this is the trade proposal, which is obviously weak in every way, shape, and form. Like, just absolutely not. But the Cowboys, man, they were sure that throwing in a fifth was going to be the sweetener that every team wanted. The Cowboys play too much fantasy football, way too much.
Yeah, it's like, or they watch the draft day movie too many times. Right. That you end up with like five first-round picks or three.
I want my draft picks back, all of them. All right, so Fred, again, we hit on the draft. We talked a lot about the draft, the players. We're going to get to know them a little bit more. I think it's very cool that, you know, you'll be out there. You'll be able to actually see these guys in action. I'll be really interested next week just to hear about, you know, what you're seeing out there. What kind of – I think you can. And you tell us, Fred, you've covered a lot of rookie camps. You've covered the Browns for a long time. What are the things again, we're talking more about implementation than anything, but what are some of the things you really feel like you can learn by sitting there and watching the rookies out there in their rookie training camp? And B, because you've done it for so long, do you have any good stories for us from your time during rookie mini camps?
Well, you know, there's always kind of the, in DeJuan Jones's rookie year, you see him on the sideline throwing up. Uh-huh. And then there was one last year as well. I'm trying to think who it was, but it's just in general because it's not real football, but you're just trying to see what they look like, you know, like in, you can usually see guys that aren't in shape because they've been on the food circuit now that they're past the draft and, you know, and really trying to cut weight and everything. A lot of them let themselves, especially the linemen. I don't know. I've seen a lot of different things, but as far as, nothing really comes to mind too much as far as funny stories or whatever. They all run together, but you see a lot of guys that are like, you realize or you see them why they weren't drafted. They might be listed at 5'9". You go, that guy swears 5'5", you know, or,
right,
you know, or somebody that's listed as 350. He's definitely 4.25, you know, or whatever. And, but yeah, kind of mind's blank on that. I'll think about that as we go on here, if there's anything that comes to mind, but it's just, it does run together because none of this really too much last is that important because at best they're going to have a 6th round quarterback throw into the receiver. So it's like, how do you even judge that? You know, when his negative is he's not accurate. It'd be more like seeing what Green looks like, the physical specimen, you know, be able to see him run and what he looks like in a uniform and guys like that. But the overarching thing is, yeah, you got to remember this is really kind of like a boot camp or a trial run for these guys. So the next time they come in, they're going to be with veterans and they got to fall right in and know what to do and not be lost out there. So more than anything, an orientation, but it will be interesting to finally put some, and get them in a Browns uniform instead of a Utah or a Washington or Texas A&M or whatever it is. Now you get some pictures and you can start putting on our site in Browns uniforms, put two and two together there.
So you're telling me this answer to this question from Serge in the comments, are we not doing an OBR Talon Green minicamp stat tracker? Is that not what you're going to be doing the whole time you're there, Fred?
Well, my friends at Coop and Chops and Tony Grossi probably be doing something with it. I mean, it's like, you know, they've found a little niche the last few years. I'm just so tired. I can't wait till the Browns finally get a quarterback where there's none, you know, it's just like, this is the quarterback and you don't have to do all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm not going to be doing any tracking.
Ah, bummer. I thought we were for sure going
to
have,
I'll do videos green. Though. That's more to me. That's, you can actually see them throw and see the guys catch and see them. Nope.
Those I want to know completion percentage
against air. I Correct. Could be 100% against air, knowing they're not going to hit me.
Let's not go crazy.
Throwing it. Hey, I got an arm. I got a gun. I had
him. And the short game. The short game in golf. Unbelievable from Fred. Unbelievable. All right, so let's go through these groups. And we spent a long time last week, Fred, talking about the draft class and the guys that we know they brought in with their selections in the draft and how impactful those guys can be. We do have a couple questions on that, but let's go here first. And so let's just go through kind of the groups, Fred. And let's start with the players that it's been reported that will be coming in as far as undrafted rookie free agents that'll be at that camp. And let's start on the offensive side of the football where – as far as undrafted rookie free agents are concerned, no quarterbacks, like you said. We'll get to that in a little bit. But a couple running backs, T.J. Harden, the SMU running back, and Devon Booth, the Mississippi State running back. Harden, 6 foot, 218 pounds, big boy. Devon Booth, 5'9", 192, smaller quick back is Booth. Three wide receivers. Aaron Anderson is 5'8", 198 pounds. He's from LSU. Janaylen Dupree from Jackson State, 5'6", 157 pounds. That is a seventh grader. And Cole Wilson, 5'7", 177 pounds from Baylor. And then lastly, just as far as on the offensive side is concerned, there is an offensive tackle there in Xavion Miller. He is 6'5", 306 pounds from Auburn. But I think the thing that stands out, Fred, is three wide receivers. Now, again, you drafted two wide receivers. And Casey Concepcion is 5'11". Everybody talks about him like he's 5'4". Obviously, Denzel Boston, 6'4". So you got some size in the wide receiver room in the draft. They did not appear to be all that interested in adding size to the wide receiver room in the undrafted free agent market. Three guys, all 5'8 or under.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little taken back the three wide receivers because you drafted two. And they have a whole slew of wide receivers, you know, that have been out there. I mean, guys from Malachi Corley, Gage LaVardane, who was an undrafted guy last year, Luke Floria, you know, from Kent State. In addition, the veterans like Cedric Tillman and Jerry Jeudy to go with these rookies. So they're not going to be there. So some of it is just to bring in some bodies, but they've done pretty well with undrafted guys. I mean, Gage LaVardane ended up, you know, contributing quite a bit at wide receiver last year. So again,
contributing.
Yeah. I mean, a lot by default.
But maybe go with Ronnie Hickman.
Yeah. As far as the two running backs didn't surprise me because they didn't draft any. You got Imani Marshall. I wouldn't be surprised if he isn't there this week. You know, there's going to be first-year guys that didn't play last year. I don't know if Raheem Sanders, you know, might be a guy that would be there this week. But you got to have somebody taking the handoffs. So that will be, you know, you brought, what, the one tackle. I guess you feel like you never have enough of them. Kid from Auburn. When you drafted two that you hope, you know, Thanos immediately your starter, and you hope that Austin Barber, third round pick, would be maybe the long term answer at right tackle. So, yeah, I just think more than anything, the bodies and so forth there. So,
I think
the notable there, that's where I think you might bring in a quarterback or two and call him a tryout player. I don't think they would make Gabriel come in, you know, to this camp. That would almost, you know, might be a slap to him. So, but you got to have more than Taylen Green out there throwing the ball.
Listen, I think, Fred, I think the names that are intriguing to me on the offensive side, I think either one of the running backs, obviously T.J. Harden, the kid out of SMU, a much bigger back, but they've got a couple guys with obviously Quinshon, decent size back there, and Rocket Sanders is huge back there, and man, I would be real bummed if he was not a part of this team moving forward. And then Devon Booth, 5'9", 192, but this kid was a home run hitter for Mississippi State. He was a playmaker left and right, super quick, super agile, can make plays out of the backfield. I think there's some versatility there with Booth that make him intriguing. I don't, unless something weird happens, I don't, especially seeing what they did in the draft, I'm not falling into the trap. I'm not falling into the Gage Larvedan trap or the who's Luke Floria trap or the what was Austin Watkins? Was that the kid's name the one year? I'm not falling into this trap of falling in love with like a mini camp, training camp, rookie camp, whatever wide receiver. It's their wide receiver room is much deeper now. So I don't really have a lot of expectation out of any of these three guys. I think it's great that they're here. Congrats to them. But man, what an uphill climb it would be for any of the three of them. But I also think Xavion Miller is somebody you could just keep an eye on because yeah, he was a tackle at Auburn, but I never read anything about him being, I read everything about him being versatile and being a really, really good run blocker. And that to me says that's a guy that you can bump to the inside and maybe get some aggression on the run blocking schemes and just add a little bit more depth. So I think Xavion Miller could be in a draft where they took some offensive linemen, could be a sneaky play in this undrafted rookie segment. Go over to the other side, because I think most of the most interesting players that they have brought in the undrafted free agent class are on the defensive side of the ball. And you got to start with the brother of their first pick in the draft. Logan Fano is coming in, or hold on, where was this? There was a great, there it is. Serge called him Fano's brother, Thanasis Antetokounmpo, making reference to Giannis and his brothers in the NBA. But Logan Fano, defensive end, pass rusher, is a guy that that they brought in and signed to a contract on that side of the ball. Tyreek Sapp is a guy that I mocked to them in pretty much every seven round mock that I did. And I didn't do a lot of them because God knows I don't know that many football players. But I really like Tyreek Sapp. I think he's got a chance to make a little noise here and prove himself as a defensive end. And it's an awesome group, and it maybe isn't the deepest group. So guys like Fano, Sapp are going to have a chance. Is it Sidnor? I don't know much about him out of Vanderbilt. Bernard Gooden, the defensive tackle, I don't know a lot about. Nate Evans is a guy they are excited about. Again, they gave him $115,000 guaranteed out of Delaware, the cornerback. So I just think anytime you see a team give a guy, an undrafted rookie, $115,000 guaranteed, seems to indicate that they have expectations for him to be around. And they did it with not one, but two of these cornerbacks. They did it with Nate Evans, the 5'11", 191 pounder from Delaware. And they also gave the same deal to Michael Coates Jr., 5'9", 184 pounder out of West Virginia. But this seems to be the guy that pretty much everybody is talking about in this undrafted rookie class. The knock on Coates is that he's little, 5'9", 184 pounds, and he's 25 years old. And that is, as far as the draft is concerned, pretty much disqualifying for the Cleveland Browns. But in the undrafted market, if you can get a guy that's really good, doesn't matter whether he's 25 years old, you take a shot on him. So Evans and Coates have both signed $115,000 guaranteed contracts with the Browns, which I think indicates that they are going to be a part of trying to raise the floor of that that cornerback room and add some depth to that position. The other two players defensively, DeCarlos Nicholson, 6'3", 200-pound corner from USC, and safety Zion Washington, 6'1", 208-pounder from Boise State. But, Fred, I think there's a lot of things to talk about on the defensive side. Fano and Spencer's brother, the two corners with guaranteed money contracts. What are your thoughts when you hear all that?
Yeah, I mean, the Fano, they have obviously an inside track. When they drafted his brother, I'm sure they talked immediately to him. And I think there's a needed edge rusher. I mean, they went out and got AJ Epenesa from the Bills, who had 6.5 sacks like the previous 3 years. He failed the physical. He was basically to be the third or fourth edge rusher to replace Cameron Thomas, who signed with the Falcons. And to date, they haven't replaced that. They, I thought they'd go out and sign a veteran to fill that void. They didn't. So I thought they would draft somebody. They didn't. So now you signed three defensive ends. So there's a real opportunity when they take a look at them to see if one of these guys can fill that bill. I'm sure they have an emergency list. There's not that many names, the ones that are on those lists are guys like Calais Campbell, who just signed with the Ravens, who's like 40, you know, guys in their 30s. There's a couple of them still left, but I think they'll take a look at these guys and they'd have a really good chance, if not to make the team, to make the practice squad. And the practice squad nowadays is a pretty big deal. It's kind of like being in AAA. You make pretty good money, you know, doing that. And the way they move guys up and down, you know, a lot of them get a chance. As far as the cornerbacks, one of the earlier ones to get guaranteed money was with the Browns, a cornerback, A.J. Green. He parlayed that into almost at least 3 or 4 years with the Browns, and it stems on that guaranteed money. And so these guys are going to get a really good look. The way it is in the NFL now, it's almost better to be an undrafted free agent than to be a seventh round pick.
Oh yeah.
Because you can get that guaranteed money. And, you know, the Browns have need at corner. I felt like I thought they would re-sign Martin Emerson. Obviously that ship sailed, because you know, and I know, as much as we like Denzel Ward, he's not going to play the full season. He always gets dinged up and misses a game or two or more. And Tyson Campbell, you know, missed some time. You got to have more than two outside guys.
Yeah.
And so in the slot, Miles Harden played a few games and played pretty well. And so the guy you talked about, Coates, I think he'd have a really good chance to be the slot guy. I did forget that they signed Miles Bryan, who's a 7-year veteran cornerback. So they do have a little bit of depth at corner. I'm not sure if he's an inside or outside or where he is. I haven't really studied him that much, but as far as they got two Miles as his backups, and they signed Trey Avery and D'Angelo Ross, who finished the season last year, but I think they were more core special teams guys. So you always need more cornerbacks. So I think the corners, especially the undrafted, going to have a really good chance, as well as the edge rushers.
Yeah, I was going to say, I see four guys on this defense that I think they're going to have sticking around through training camp. I think there's four guys on that defensive list that are going to be, if they don't make the team, they're going to be very difficult cuts. I think obviously Logan Fano, he was a captain. He was the guy, he was a productive player in college. And there's a little bit about the Cavs did this with Evan Mobley. Remember, they carried Isaiah Mobley for a while.
Yep.
You brought a guy that's born and raised and lived in Utah his whole life. Well, why not bring his brother, make him a little more comfortable moving across the country and coming to Cleveland and living and all that. I think there's and if he could play football, I think there's a value add there that you don't really think about on the field. But I think Fano, I think Tyreek Sapp, if he's healthy, I think Tyreek Sapp, if Tyreek Sapp was healthy, I think throughout his college career, you're talking about probably a day two guy.
I read something that Sapp a year ago was projected as possibly a first round pick.
It was projected to be like a top 15 pick. And then the injury bugs hit him. And if you can get that kind of talent and he stays healthy, I think Sapp, I think Fano, and then I think Evans and Coates are, if they don't make the team, it's going to be a very difficult decision on any of the four of those guys. Any of the four of those guys. So I think the Browns did well there. They also brought in a special teamer, a punter in West Paul from Oklahoma State. I don't know anything about West Paul. He's 6'5", 207 pounds. And unless for some reason, Bohorquez, who, listen, I am not the world's biggest Bohorquez guy. He's got a massive leg. He just uses it all the time, even when he doesn't need to. And that drives me crazy with him. I'd be surprised.
They have a punter already on the roster, a guy from your Texas A&M, Nick Constantinos.
Yep.
So they're
bringing guys in for camp.
Yeah. You know, so that's kind of an annual thing there, but yeah, I don't know if they want to get a look at some punt returners. They have to have somebody punt in the rookie camp. And if nothing else, West Paul's going to get to do that.
Yeah. And then the other group is the guys that are not undrafted rookie free agents. Instead, these are guys that just got invites, according to sources, to Browns camp. And this is where we start talking about another quarterback that'll be in camp. And it's reported that Bryson Barnes from Utah State will be the other quarterback in the camp. We know Jiren Johnson, the Bowling Green tight end. The Browns had a little bit of luck with a Bowling Green tight end last year. So maybe they're trying to repeat that, although I think this is a much longer shot. But Jiren Johnson from Bowling Green will be in camp. Defensive lineman Carter Hewitt from Illinois will be in camp. A couple linebackers, Reed Carrico from West Virginia. And one that I think it's these kind of players that get their invites that aren't necessarily signed to contract, but get their invites. James Conway is a guy that I'm interested to see how things go with him in rookie training camp. He is a linebacker, but he's like a first-team All-American linebacker out of Fordham. So obviously not playing on the top level, but at the level he played out of Fordham out there in New York. It's actually my sister's alma mater. James Conway is a guy that I'm very interested to see how it goes. Another corner, Malcolm Bell from Michigan State. John Furlman from Ohio State, the long snapper. And then Cole Hudson from Texas, the offensive lineman. So there's another guy, another group of guys there that'll be battling. But this is the fun part where you just get to go in, you get to learn these guys, they get to learn the system, and then you see which guys are made for it. I've always thought for rookie minicamp, if you're Spencer Fano, if you're Casey Concepcion, if you're Denzel Boston, if you're Emmanuel McNeil Warren, these guys that got picked, Austin Barber got picked in the first couple days. Your first impression with the team is going in there and making sure that you look like a day one or two pick. When you know some of these guys, you know, I take that guy I was just talking about, James Conway out of Fordham, All-American football player. You know he's going to come in and just bust his butt in this camp to try to make an impression. I think the pressure's on these early round pick guys to like come out there and set the tone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this is their first chance. It doesn't matter how highly decorated you were in college. You're starting, you know, from scratch. Obviously, it helps knowing you got a guaranteed pretty good size contract. But yeah, these are always it's a chance to make that impression. Like I said, last year just impressed me from day one to see Schlesinger. You know, I didn't know anything about the guy. When they drafted him, you're kidding me. You drafted a linebacker? I saw his name, but I'd never really seen him play. And I'm like, oh, he looks like a player, you know? And
yeah, right.
Just the limited running around out there. Intercepted a pass like the first day, you know, like a pick six. I go, okay. You know, you got to do those kind of things to catch your eye. And so that's what I'm looking for, just to see, get my eyes on some of these guys and some of the new guys. And even though it's a rookie mini camp, like you said, they'll end up being 40 guys there, and it's hard to even get a good look at the guys that are there, let alone you get to training camp and there's 90.
Yeah, 100%. Anyway, so we're going to find out this weekend about some of these rookies. Again, Fred will be posting up some videos, and we'll be doing some write-ups at theobr.com, so make sure you're subscribed to that. To tune in all the way through. Be Safe wanted to know if there's a kicker anywhere in there. I didn't see a kicker anywhere in there. Again, the team doesn't necessarily have to report ahead of time everybody that's going to be there. So all these players are just basically reports from either their schools, their agents, people that cover them, people that follow them. So as of right now, I haven't seen one, but Andre Schmidt did himself a world of good after that Cincinnati Bengals game with the Browns last year. So hopefully Schmidt is just good to go. Let's see here. Let's just have this conversation. Well, do we want to do this? No, I don't want to do this. I don't even want to. We're in the worst part about May and June. Sorry, you can see me having the internal battle. The worst part about May and June is just the reckless speculation. Just reckless speculation on. I think it was Grossi that came out and talked about, well, if Deshaun Watson wins the job, he thinks Dylan Gabriel is better suited as the backup than Shedeur Sanders. And obviously, you had Mary Kay's reporting. I will say, maybe you throw this out there, because we've gotten to know Mary Kay. You've gotten to know Mary Kay for a long, long time. I've gotten to know her through the show a little bit. She's obviously run with her reports on Shedeur Sanders maybe having a very good chance to be the quarterback. Fred, you've known Mary Kay a long time. not that we need to stand up for anybody or anything. It's not about that. But when you see that report, where do you think that's coming? She doesn't have exactly the reputation of just making stuff up. Where do you think that's coming from?
No, she's not going to make things up. But somebody, you know, is given information probably from inside the building or somewhere close to the situation. And, you know, I go back to last year. We haven't seen Deshaun Watson. Well, if you count that mini camp the week, that's the first time I really saw him practice. And that was just, you know, going through a little bit. They weren't doing a whole lot. But since training camp of 2024, because what you have to understand, when training camp ends, practice is shut. We're allowed to watch them stretch and do individuals where they just are getting loose. We don't watch practice. Last year, the Browns designated Watson for return, which means he can practice for up to 3 weeks, and you have to make a decision to activate him or leave him on injury reserve. They designated him, so he practiced for 3 weeks at the end of the season. We did not get to see. We saw him in warm-ups, stretching and stuff, but we did not see any practice. But she reported several times that she was told that he was the best-looking quarterback on the field during those 3 weeks. And so that leads me to believe that was because we couldn't watch it. Somebody is giving that information or saying that information. So with that being said, I don't know why the Browns would want that information out in April.
Right.
Unless it's to motivate Sanders or to set the expectations. Oh, it's going to be Watson. Get ready type of thing. It's a long way between now and September. You know, we know one of the biggest things, he's injury prone. He's not been able to finish the season. He could be injured. I don't think you want to.
He's not able to throw the ball to his receivers.
Or anything this soon. But I do think to start things, I wouldn't be surprised. I've said it on this show. When Monken said it's going to be open competition, mark my word, and you can go back and find it, that all things being equal, I wouldn't be surprised if Deshaun Watson was the starting quarterback. First of all, he's been doing this for 10 years. At least mentally, he can pick up an offense. Shedeur Sanders didn't really have a playbook in college. Last year was his first, and he got 7 games, you know?
And now he's the new coach.
Much more upside for him. But early on here, with a new system from Monken, it's hard for me to believe that Watson wouldn't be already picked up the system and is going to look better in practice. Again, not being hit, anything like that.
That.
They all, to me, in the mini camp, didn't look that much different. They all threw the ball well. They all moved around well. Watson moved around pretty good to me. I didn't see really anything where he looked like the effects of the Achilles. But when the bullets fly in even training camp or against other teams, that's where you start to see some of that. So I don't know. It seems way premature to start putting. I could see something like that coming out about the mandatory mini camp because that's the last tune up before training camp. And I do think Monken wants to hit the ground running, but yeah, it's coming from somewhere. I just don't know the motivations.
That's the point. Listen, far be it for me. You guys want to discuss Deshaun Watson and Shedeur Sanders and stuff in the comments right now. I agree with you, Fred. I think it could happen. I think it would be foolish and stupid. I think Todd Monken's off to a blazing start to his first offseason as the Browns head coach. And I don't like. The thing that I don't like is I feel like there is probably a little bit of stress in terms of Todd Monken. Again, I don't mean to make it sound like Todd Monken's on the verge of death. This is not what I'm saying. But at 60 years old, to get his first coaching job, there's a part of me that is a little nervous that there's like, well, we got to roll with Deshaun Watson. And it's like, no, you don't have to roll with this guy. But it's not about that. It's about, and Phil said it great in the comments, MKC's reporting what somebody told her. Doesn't mean they didn't have an agenda and didn't use her to advance that agenda. I think that clearly is what has happened here. I think somebody, I don't know what the agenda is. Maybe the agenda is they're being honest and they think Deshaun Watson might be the starter. Maybe they're trying to, like you said, motivate Shedeur Sanders. Maybe they're just, like you said, trying to get it out there that Deshaun Watson is going to be a part of the room at least, and that people need to get comfortable with it. But yeah, she's out there reporting, and she's reporting what somebody told her. Let's see here. There's a couple questions here. Chat underscore username has a couple of them. What's the forecast for Dylan Gabriel? Will he make it through the season with the Browns? What's your feeling on that, Fred? Obviously, they add Talen Green. You've got Deshaun. You've got Shedeur. Forecast for Dylan Gabriel.
Well, first off, I think when you got a rookie quarter or a quarterback on the rookie contract, it's golden, you know?
Right, right.
Even if you don't think he's ready to go, you spent a third-round pick on him. Andrew Berry has been very going the extra mile with draft picks. We know many third-round picks that were around way longer than, you know, than they thought. They thought enough of him to take him in the third round. And so I know, all things being equal, when they thought Watson was going to be the sure shot starter, they really only wanted two quarterbacks on the active roster. If you remember, they had Josh Dobbs to back up Watson, and they had DTR, and they traded Dobbs just so they didn't have to take up another spot on the roster and made DTR his rookie year the backup. Well, I think they've kind of, he's learned his lesson. They went through so many quarterbacks, but it's hard for me to figure out what they would do with Talen Green. You keep the three. I think there's a role for Talen Green. I don't know if you could keep him on the practice squad or not. You know, that somebody says, you know, let's take that guy because he's got 4.3 speed. And I think they're going to use him some role in the lineup, but I don't know if you could keep four guys on the roster. So with that being said, I guess if you really feel good enough about Green being the third one, maybe you move on from Gabriel and trading. But I would be kind of surprised if they traded Sanders or Gabriel or moved on from Green, you know, as a developmental guy. But the reason he traded Dobbs, because they were afraid to put DTR on the practice squad, knowing that somebody or felt like somebody would sign him off the practice squad. And if you really think Green's got some potential, even though he went in the sixth round, I don't know if you can put him on the practice squad.
Yeah, I think it's got to be the initial thought process, because everything that everybody has fallen in love with on Talen Green right now are these physical traits, but nobody's fallen in love with his quarterback abilities. There's a reason he was there in the sixth round. And he may have been there after. Who knows what team would have taken him if the Browns didn't. And so for all the 6'5", 4'3", 40, you could use him in this, you could use him in that conversation. I think Green is probably bound to start this thing on the practice squad. And I agree with you. You might not like... I don't really have any hope for Dylan Gabriel to be a long-term NFL quarterback. Having said that, I don't know that that's a fair assessment based on what we've seen so far out of a rookie that got thrown into a tough situation, and it is what it is. And with him being on a rookie contract, I have no problem with Dylan Gabriel being the third start, the third option on the team, get Green to the practice squad, which I absolutely believe he would just make it to, and that's it. I think everybody's just over talking it because you want to talk about your new, like, everybody wants to talk about their new fun squeaky toy in Talen Green, but again, teams are evaluating him based on how they think he can play quarterback, and there's a long way for that kid to go to be an NFL quarterback.
Well, back to Gabriel for a minute. The criticism when he was drafted in the third round, most of the scouting reports said that he could be the long-term backup in the NFL. Well, you don't draft a guy usually in the third round to be a long-term backup, but he really could be a long-term backup. Hear me out here. If they decide that Deshaun Watson is worth playing and Shedeur Sanders, they don't feel good enough to start him over Watson, I could see them moving on from Sanders and keeping Gabriel as the long-term backup after this year. Let's say next year they draft a quarterback and Gabriel becomes the backup and Sanders is moved, because I think Sanders has some potential, but I don't know if he's a long-term backup in the NFL. He brings none of his fault, but he brings a lot of attention just because everybody wants to see what he has. And I almost feel like if you've decided he's not the quarterback to develop, then move on from him, because I don't know if he's the backup type quarterback long-term. Gabriel could be better suited to be the backup quarterback in the NFL long-term than Shedeur Sanders.
And listen, I know a lot of people, there's a lot of Green support in the comments. I'm seeing it. I'm not saying I think Gabriel's better than Green or vice versa. I just think Gabriel's got a year under his belt in the NFL. I think there's value to that on a guy on a rookie contract. Now, can they get anything for him? We don't know. We don't know if he's worth anything on the trade market, what somebody would give up to get him. Wouldn't be much. But again, I think what everybody's fallen in love with the other quarterback are things that are not probably viewed as valuable in the NFL world. Again, remember, this guy has elite traits. And it's what Todd Monken talked about. They drafted traits in those later rounds. It's my favorite way to draft. You're not necessarily looking for the guy that's just going to be your starter. You're drafting traits for a guy that maybe 5 years from now is, oh my gosh, that guy's really good. But there's a reason when you really break it down that the guy that's 6'5 and runs a 4.3 40 and all that stuff was sitting there at the sixth round. There's a reason for that. And that says about what his quarterback play. And I like the kid and I hope he comes in and succeeds. He's a smart kid. He's an exciting player to watch. I think when he's out there in these preseason games and training camp, it is going to be a blast to watch. There's so much development that needs to happen with him. So much development.
I think that's what the preseason, he's going to play a lot, could determine if he can get to the practice squad. You know, if he really looks like, you know, he could do something, you might not be able to put him on the practice squad. Team would claim him, you know. So to be determined. But, yeah, I mean, the Browns have a lot of holes, and it's – I don't know if they can – have the luxury of carrying a fourth quarterback or somebody that's just a gadget or a wildcat type guy to begin with.
Yeah. All right, Fred, 8:03 inside the Browns beat goes by just like that, as it always does. You'll want to hang out or tune in next week for Inside the Browns Beat, 7:00 on Wednesday, because again, we've got this rookie training camp coming up. Fred's going to have a look at these guys, and he'll be able to give you a firsthand look. They let Fred in the building. They don't let degenerates like me anywhere near the building. But they let Fred in the building. He's going to have a look at some of these kids, these rookies, some of the guys we know about, some of the guys we've talked about the most, and some of the guys we talked about tonight that are invites that maybe make a name. Fred, what'd you have there?
I was just saying, get on my ex, Fred Greetham 9, and I'll have videos. You'll be able to see them first time on the field, just as it happens, because it'll be live real time as it's happening. So Friday at 1 is first practice with all the rookies out in the field. So check it all out.
Yeah.
Then I'll 100%. Talk about it next week.
Get over there and follow Fred. Get over to theobyard.com and subscribe over there, because as Fred brings you those live reports, we're going to get you some written reports, lots of different content, written content about the Cleveland Browns. It all happens at theobyard.com. Cleveland's oldest and largest independent Browns coverage site. That's going to do it here for whatever episode this is. I didn't even count the number, but this episode
36,
episode 36 of Inside the Browns Beat. Again, go follow the OBR at the OBR on the socials. stay tuned. You got about 55 minutes from now, and I will be back here with my boys, Chad and Joe, for Garage Beers, where we're going to talk about the Browns, the Cavs, the Guardians, the hockey playoffs, so much more. Please make sure you get back, grab a beer, hang out with us at the Garage Beers for episode 311 at 9 o'clock. But that'll do it for us here on Inside the Browns Beat. He is Fred Greatham. I am Michael Keefe. We'll see you next week. Until then, as always, go Browns.
Thank you.